We believe that alcoholism is a disease and that Alcoholics Anonymous is one solution to that disease. I'm here to bring you the voices of its members. Everyone that comes on the show, including myself, is an active member and has found recovery in the rooms of AA. As you listen, please take what works for you and leave the rest.
Hi, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Tawny Rice. My sobriety date is July 15th, 2019. And for that, I am truly grateful. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity today to share my story. It's kind of interesting because when I had first got sober, I remember thinking that, you know, I wanted to share my story, but I didn't know if I'd ever get the opportunity to do that. And I did have a brief opportunity to do that when I was newly sober. I was probably about 3 months sober, and my brother had entered a sober living, and we were kind of involved with that sober living, my husband and I. So they had asked if we would be willing to come share. And I remember thinking that my story wasn't going to reach anybody, that it didn't have any weight to it, and it wasn't going to be interesting enough. And I was fortunate, you know, to have that opportunity. And a couple of the women there at the recovery center had reached out to me afterwards. And that was just a small glimpse of what it is to be able to be an alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous and be able to share what you have to say. So having this opportunity today is a really big deal to me. And I'm just going to start from the beginning. I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope, or what it was like, what happened, and what it's like for me today. And, you know, from the time I was a child, I can remember my life being very different. It wasn't a typical childhood. My parents were really highly involved in their addictions. And one of my earliest memories as a child is sitting on this little stool in the living room. And I remember I was waiting all night long for my parents to take me to Jack in the Box because I was hungry. And at this time, I was about 3 years old. So I find it interesting that I can remember something so far back. And that's one of the earliest memories that I have, like I said. And I was sitting there, you know, waiting all night for them to take me. And they never came out of the garage. My parents had their own addiction. They were very involved with those addictions. And us children always came second to that. And I remember, you know, sitting there, and morning finally came, and they finally took me to go get something to eat. And on the way back, they were just fighting crazy, and we were just driving through the desert. And that was kind of the start of how much chaos my life had all the time. And as a child, from that point on, I really think that everything I did was to be able to feel accepted and loved by them, because I never got that attention. And like I said, both of my parents had addictions that they struggled with their whole lives. And at that time in my life, it was me, my brother, and my older half sister. And we kind of took care of each other and tried to make things work, you know, and we tried to be there for our parents as much as we could. And my mom and my dad would fight a lot. And my mom and my dad were constantly getting in trouble with the law. There were so many times when the door would just be broken down by the police, you know, just coming in and taking my mom away most of the time. And that's another thing, you know, my mom spent a good 13 years in and out of prison throughout my childhood. So I didn't really have that motherly figure to look up to. And I can remember a point when my mom was in prison and my dad had just got out of a rehab, and my grandma was taking care of us a lot because he was constantly being involved in the program. He was involved in NA a lot and he was gone a lot. So it was just my brother, my grandma, and I, and my sister was staying with her dad. So there wasn't really too much structure there. It was very unstructured. And I can remember feeling alone a lot as a child. And as a child, one of the things that I always wanted to do was to do well. I wanted to do well as far as pleasing other people. I wanted to please my dad. Even though my mom wasn't there, I wanted her to hear good things when she would call home from prison. I wanted my grandma to be proud of me, and I wanted to do really good in school. And from the age of about 7, I excelled in school. I did really great in school, and I was constantly getting awards, recognitions. I was getting all these things, you know, and looking back, now I know that that was my way of trying to please other people and to gain that acceptance and attention that I wasn't granted. And like I said, my parents, they had a lot of differences going on, and they tried to stay married for as long as they could, but it was a very toxic relationship. There's always a lot of fighting, a lot of infidelity going on, a lot of, you know, drug use and things like that. And so we never really had any kind of solid foundation, my brother and my sister and I. It was really, really a lonely childhood. I felt very alone. And at the same time, I also felt like I had to grow up very quickly because I had to be my brother's caretaker. That's what I felt in my heart, is I had to take care of him. And so I was always putting myself last in every situation and just trying to be there for him and be that motherly figure that neither of us had. And my dad was gone a lot. And so we would be staying home from school by ourselves a lot. And I can remember, you know, trying to cook a batch of brownies at 8 years old, and I couldn't do it. You know, I messed it up. And just those little things constantly are coming back to me now in sobriety, all those little memories. And, you know, my mom had finally came home from prison for the last time, and my dad was clean, and my mom wanted to use drugs again. And so they just ended up back in that cycle of crazy chaos. And from that point, I remember I was about 10 years old. It got really rough there for a minute. And the police had came and gave us a choice of, you know, who are we going to go with? And so my dad took my brother and I went with my mom. And my mom had this boyfriend, and, you know, they were actively in their addictions together. And I remember one day my mom was sleeping on the couch with her boyfriend, and I went to go and pick up my leopard backpack, and I noticed she had taken it from me. And I was wondering why, you know, and every time I wanted to get it back, she just wouldn't give it to me. And I remember going and picking up that leopard backpack and opening it and finding a backpack full of syringes. And at that point, I threw them on top of my mom and I asked her, what the hell, you know, a little 10-year-old child asking their parent, what the hell? And I got in trouble for that, and I never got an explanation. And that was a really scary thing for me at that time. And I don't even think I fully comprehended what was really going on. I knew that my mom was using drugs, but I don't think I knew to what extent it was. And I don't think I knew to what extent it had caused me harm and danger, because I had always wanted that relationship with my mom, and I was willing to accept her any way that she was. You know, it didn't matter how she was. I was willing to take it. And even if it meant that we wouldn't have a solid place to live, or that, you know, I wouldn't have new stuff all the time for school, or maybe even go to school sometimes, I was willing to take it because I just wanted that love and acceptance from her that I had never got. And I remember being, you know, a child and asking her if she would leave me notes under my pillow so when I wake up, I could read them. And I never got those notes, you know, so I was constantly being let down, you know, by my mom. And today I know that both of my parents did the best they could with what they had, and maybe they didn't have a lot. And so, you know, my mom ended up going back to prison, and my dad and I and my brother, we were living together, and my dad was taking care of us, and he was doing okay. I'm sure he was still using drugs at the time, but he was making it. He was making it, and we were paying the bills. We had our electricity on. It was okay. And my dad ended up meeting a woman that worked at the school that I went to. And they ended up getting together, and, you know, she had kids, he had kids, and we all just moved into one big house, or our house. We all moved into the house together. And at first it was okay. You know, things went all right for a little while, and we got along okay. I was starting to feel like maybe I was going to be able to get that motherly relationship. And then after a while, things just had not started to go so well. And what had really sparked it off was that my mom and my sister were calling the house phone wanting to talk to me and my brother. And my dad's girlfriend at the time, she didn't want that to happen. And so they would just hang up when they would call. And I would actually call them back sometimes, or if I answered the phone, I would talk to them and then somebody would tell on me, and I'd end up getting in a lot of trouble for that. So that also kind of, I think as a child, gave me the notion that I had to be secretive about things. I had to keep a lot of things to myself. And so I just started at that age to start to bottle stuff up. And at that time, one of my stepsister's older friends, he had gotten kicked out of his house. So he ended up moving into our house. And I think I was about 11 and he must have been 19, right around that age. So he was an adult already. And I started to notice that I was starting to get attention from him. And I wasn't really sure what to make of it, you know, because I was just a child. I had no idea about, you know, sex or anything related to that. And I noticed I started to get attention, and I noticed it started to progress in an inappropriate way. And I didn't want to tell anybody at first, you know, because it was kind of embarrassing and I didn't understand it, you know, and it ended up progressing to the point where I ended up being molested at this point, you know, and at that time I didn't realize that was what was going on. And I had tried to tell my dad and my stepmom, but they were very wrapped up in their own things and trying to figure out their own relationship that I don't think they really seen that happening. So this was happening. And like I had mentioned before, I was always a really good kid in school. I was always really involved in ASB, AVID, all these different kind of programs that the school would offer to kids who were doing exceptionally well. And I had buried myself in schoolwork because that's what made me feel good. And I wanted to appear like I was doing good on the outside. But at this time, I had began to act out in school. And it wasn't with my teachers or with my grades, but I started to want to kind of run away from school. I wanted to not be in that house anymore with my dad and my stepmom and all the kids. I didn't want to do that anymore. You know, it was becoming too much for me to handle. Plus this situation that was going on with that guy that lived there. So I was experiencing inappropriate sexual relationship with somebody that I felt, you know, it was wrong. And I didn't want to do it anymore, but I didn't really have a choice, you know, and I didn't really understand that at the time. So I was going and running away and going to go see my mom, you know, who lived in the same town. And, you know, the cops would pick me up and take me back home. And when I would get taken back home, it would be absolutely miserable. And I couldn't talk to them. They wouldn't listen to me. And so I just kind of kept repeating this pattern. And it got to the point where I was an outcast in the house and none of the children would speak to me. Nobody would listen to me. I was constantly in trouble for just wanting to be with my family. And I do know that I could have maybe done some things differently, like maybe not ran away from school and stuff like that. But as a child, those things don't really run through your mind. And especially when you've gone through abusive or neglectful situations, those things are not anything that cross your mind. So one day I had ran away from school. The cops picked me up and took me back home. And I told them I didn't want to live anymore. And so they ended up taking me down, you know, and putting me in the mental hospital. And I was about 13 years old at this time. And I remember being there and I loved it. I didn't want to go home. I felt some kind of security there. I felt safe. I felt like somebody actually cared about me there. I didn't feel like such an outcast. And I didn't have to deal with all this crap going on at home, all this instability, you know, this unstable stuff. I didn't have to deal with that while I was there. And I remember after about like 10 or 12 days, I had to go back home and I was just devastated. I just did not want to go back home. And so anyway, so I go back home and my parents are going through their divorce at this time. My dad still has his girlfriend and, you know, her kids living at the house. And my mom has been working really hard trying to get us back. And it's almost that time where we're supposed to go live with my mom. It's probably about 3 months. If I could have just waited that 3 months, we would have went with her. And I had told one of my friends what was going on with that guy that was staying at my dad's house. And he told my mom, and my mom was absolutely distraught over it. And she ended up calling the police, and the police took us, my brother and I, and they put us into foster care because we couldn't go live with my mom at that time because she was still trying to get her life established. My dad, we couldn't live with him anymore because of that situation. So we ended up going in foster care. And it's kind of interesting because a social worker had came out to our home quite a few times. And each time the social worker had came out, she didn't find anything wrong with the home when there was definitely some serious stuff going on behind the scenes. And so I already didn't trust the system. I already felt a mistrust in something that was supposed to protect me. And my brother and I ended up going into foster care. And that first night in foster care, my brother and I were very scared. And my brother ended up coming in the middle of the night to the room that I was in and asking if he could sleep with me because he was scared. And once again, I felt the need to protect him and be there for him. So that's what he did. And for the next 2.5, almost 3 years, we bounced around from foster home to foster home, trying to find our place, hopefully, you know, trying to trust an adult. And that just didn't happen for us. And while I was in foster care, I lived at this home, and I was in high school at this time. I was probably about 15 years old, and I had gone to hang out with one of my friends. And that night, I knew we were going to go to like a party, and I knew there was going to be drinking there, but I wasn't sure if that's something I wanted to participate in because I had never really done that before. So we get to the party and they're, you know, busting out the Bacardi 151. So I took about 4 shots back to back. First time drinker, not knowing anything about the effects of alcohol or anything like that. And I was just plastered immediately. And somehow she got me back to the foster home and I couldn't get my way inside. I ended up passing out outside by the gate, waking up, going in the house, and then, you know, facing my consequences in the morning for what I had done. And although I was remorseful for what I had done, at the same time, that blackout mode that you get when you drink alcohol was a feeling I had never felt before. And I was interested in that. And so I started to begin on my alcoholic journey, I call it. And at the time, I didn't realize it. And I actually didn't even realize that that was the start of it up until a few months ago during sobriety, because I kept trying to pinpoint, when was it that I really started drinking? And from that first time, you know, I just started drinking a little bit more, a little bit more, and a little bit more. And it was like a constant thing. I had a boyfriend at the time and we would hang out and drink or whatever, you know, and it wasn't like, I wasn't plastered drunk like that first time, but I definitely got that head change that I was seeking. And we were back now living with my mom a couple of years later after being in foster care. And at first it started going okay. And then it went back to how it was before, maybe even a little bit worse. And my mom was still active in her addiction with her boyfriend she had at the time. And they were constantly using drugs in the house. So I was looking for any way I could escape from that. So I was just going anywhere I could. I'd go to my sister's house for a little bit. I started having older boyfriends, much older than what I was. And I'd go and stay with them for a few days, and I'd still be going to school and, you know, doing well in that aspect. But in the emotional aspect, I was starting to slowly break down a little bit every time. And then my younger brother started using drugs. And, you know, he was using them with my mom and her boyfriend even at that time. And all these weird people would come to the house, you know, that I didn't want to be around. And I remember just hating them for that. I hated them for using drugs together, and I hated them for doing something that didn't include me. I didn't feel a part of yet again. You know, I felt so much on the outside, and it was heartbreaking. And so once again, I turned to alcohol, and it wasn't a major thing at this point. I don't think, not like it became, but it started to progress little by little. And, you know, that time in my life, the only way that I can describe it is very dark. And that darkness stayed with me for a long time. And, you know, my childhood was not anything that I had ever asked for. And for it to be that way and then just kind of have to deal with it, that's a lot for a child. That puts a lot on a child's shoulders. And so, you know, we're living with my mom, and then we end up moving back to a town where we had lived before. And we're living in this town, and my mom is got this apartment through welfare. We were living in a hotel for a little bit. She met this boyfriend, and then she got the apartment through welfare and moved the new boyfriend in. Well, the new boyfriend was addicted to heroin, addicted to, you know, other drugs. And my mom started, you know, slowly doing the same things with him. And I remember we were living in the apartment. We had no heat. We had no electricity. We would have to like steal electricity to heat the bath water in the microwave. And I never had clean clothes. We lived in a really bad part of town. So it was a constant struggle, especially being a young girl walking around in this neighborhood or trying to go anywhere in this neighborhood. And I always felt very unsafe. And my mom and my brother and her boyfriend are all using drugs. And I can remember a lot of times where they would actually go into the bedroom, lock the door. I'd be sitting by myself in the living room while they'd be laughing, using drugs, having a great time. And I felt very alone. I felt so alone. And so I started seeing this guy, and he used drugs also, but he had told me he had stopped because I didn't want anything to do with that. I wanted absolutely nothing to do with anybody who did drugs. It sickened me, even the thought of that. And so I had thought he had stopped using drugs. Well, one day we were hanging out at a friend's house, and at this point I had started smoking marijuana. And so we were all hanging out doing that. Well, he had disappeared, and I went to go look for him, and I found him in the garage, you know, doing other things. And at that point I was really upset again, and I felt let down, and I felt set apart again. And so I finally said, you know what? I want to know what this is about. I want to know why it's so important to everybody else around me that they're willing to put this before me. Maybe if I do this, I'll fit in a little bit. So I did it. And I ended up dropping out of high school and moving with my boyfriend to Lake Havasu and just really struggling and getting into all kinds of trouble all around. And being this young 17-year-old kid out by themselves with no money, no job, no car, just trying to make it. And, you know, living in Havasu was a big party, but I had stopped doing drugs. So I thought, you know, the drinking, as long as I could drink, I'd be okay. And so yet again, alcohol was my crutch. And I was holding on to that, you know, for many, many years. And I ended up moving back to California and started getting into the drug scene again. And I was drinking all the time. And in the midst of all of my addiction, I had met this guy, and he wasn't a good guy. He's not a good guy at all. And, you know, I started seeing him. Well, at the same time, I had started seeing my husband, who I'm with now. And my husband, when I had met him, he was sober. He was an active member in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't really want too much to do with that. So I told him I didn't want anything serious. Well, this other guy, I ended up getting pregnant by this other guy unexpectedly. And he ended up going back to prison. There was a lot of really bad things that happened with that relationship. And at one point in time, my husband, he didn't like him. And we weren't married yet at this time. But he ended up breaking out this guy's window in his car. And this guy didn't like that. And I was about 2 months pregnant at the time. And so he ended up taking me in his car, and he took me to this place, and he had a girl, you know, beat me up while I'm pregnant. And then I had to get on my knees and beg him for forgiveness while he was holding a gun to my head. So I had this really, really traumatic experience. And at that time, yet again, I was disappointed in myself for putting myself in such a position like that. And so he ended up going back to prison. And my current husband, he had always told me that he loved me and that he knew I was supposed to be with him. And of course, I didn't believe that. And I didn't want anything to do with him because that was a normal, healthy situation. You know, he was a normal, healthy person. Even though he was in recovery, it was a lot more normal to me than anything I'd seen before. And so I was about 3 months pregnant, and I just called him up one day and I was like, you know what? I guess I'll move in with you. You know, I guess that's what I'll do. And so we moved in together, and I was pregnant at this time, and he was sober and I was not. I was still actively, you know, using drugs. I was actively drinking every day, you know, throughout my pregnancy. And I remember praying to God all the time, asking him, please, Lord, child. I don't want her to give my child a life that they deserve, that I never had. And I prayed this all throughout my pregnancy. And when I was about 6 months pregnant, by the grace of God, I was able to stop using and drinking for that amount of time. And that was also a really rough period of time when you're pregnant and trying to get sober. And I did it somehow, some way, by the grace of God. And it was a lot easier to do because my husband was an active member in Alcoholics Anonymous and he was sober and he had no idea that I was using drugs. He had no idea or drinking. But anyway, so then I had my baby girl and, you know, I also need to mention that my husband had a son and his son was from a previous relationship and the mother had passed away from drugs and alcohol when his son was a year old. So at this time in my life, I'm becoming not only a mother of one child, but I'm also being a motherly figure to another. So I'm basically becoming a mother of two. And so I have my daughter, you know, she's healthy. She was perfect. You know, everything went great. The delivery went well. And I finally was able to feel that love that I had never felt before. I felt that finally. And he knew that he wasn't her biological father, but we still put his name, you know, on the birth certificate. And, you know, that was a reminder that it doesn't matter whether you're blood or you are, that, you know, somebody can step up and be that parent and love your child. And I knew that he would do that. And that was also part of what had drawn me to him, was that I knew I could rely on him and that he would be something stable for me. So, you know, we're doing our thing, we're living our life, we're raising this baby and things are going pretty good. And when she's about 3 months old is when I start drinking again and it starts getting worse and worse. And I wasn't drinking every day, but I was drinking. I wasn't using drugs anymore. That addiction was removed from me, you know, by the grace of God, but I had replaced it with another. And also at this time I had started to attend Al-Anon meetings and because we weren't really getting along as well as I would have liked. So I figured it had to have been him, not anything to do with me. It definitely had to be him. And so I figured I'd go to Al-Anon to try and fix him because, you know, it couldn't be me. That's the problem. It's got to be him and his alcoholic tendencies. And so, you know, I'm going to Al-Anon for a few years and it's not really doing much for me. And I try to do some step work in Al-Anon and I get to step four and then that's it. I don't go any further. And so in the midst of all this, my daughter's biological father tries to come back into her life and I make a really poor decision and I am unfaithful to my husband. We weren't married yet at this time. We were just, you know, together, but I was unfaithful to him. And it ended up having to be where I had to tell him what I had done. And I was absolutely humiliated. And I was absolutely disgusted that I could do that to somebody who had loved me so much. But, you know, looking back, I do see that alcohol played a part in that. Alcohol played a huge part from the very moment that I had really relied on it, because it turned me into a very selfish, self-centered and self-seeking person. You know, I didn't care about hurting other people as long as I got something out of it. And so, you know, it ended up being a really bad situation and we had to fight, you know, for my daughter in court and God granted it. And, you know, her biological father is no longer a part of her life today. And she doesn't know anybody else as her father, but her dad, you know, my husband. And I'm really grateful for that, you know, that aspect. But that was a very rough time for me. And I think that's when my alcoholism really started to take off. And at this time, I had also started going to school and my alcoholism kept progressing and progressing. And my husband and I, you know, he ended up proposing and we decided we were going to get married. And I remember on my wedding day, I started drinking early in the morning, all day long, you know, even after the ceremony, before the ceremony. And I remember thinking, I love him, but I don't know if I'm ready to marry him. I don't know if I'm ready to be a wife yet. I don't know if I can do that. And I had asked God for direction. No matter, you know, where I was at in my life, I had asked him for direction at that time, and he had directed me to continue and go through with the marriage. And I'm so thankful that I decided to do that. And so anyway, so, you know, we got married and things were going okay. But my alcoholism started to get even worse, and he started to notice it. And he would make little comments here and there, like, "Oh, don't you think you've like had enough to drink? Or you think maybe that you should like stop drinking? Do you ever want to go to a meeting or something?" And that would just absolutely, I was repulsed by it. I thought, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just having fun, just drinking. And now is at a time in my life where I had a really good job, you know, working for a foster family agency. So now I had the means to drink. I had the money, and I had friends now that I could go out and party with, and we'd have a great time. All the while, my husband is at home, a sober alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm just here, you know, doing my thing. And, you know, I wish that I could say that I thought about those things during my alcoholism, but I didn't. That wasn't important to me. The only thing that was important to me was getting away from all this pain that I had been carrying around for so many years. And then this pain that I kept seeming to experience throughout my adult life. And the only way that I could get rid of that pain was by a drink, you know? And I did a lot of things throughout my alcoholism that could have potentially ruined my marriage, you know? And I'm so grateful today that that didn't happen, because I was finally able to see with clear eyes what I had, you know? And when we're in active alcoholism, we take for granted everything. Nothing matters. The only thing that matters is how we're going to get that next drink. And our lives don't revolve around the people that love us or the things that matter. They revolve around that drink. And, you know, I didn't see that. And we had gotten in so many arguments, and it was my fault, you know, because I couldn't be honest and admit that I had a problem with alcohol. And, you know, I'd get drunk and I'd start acting crazy and, you know, just doing wild things. And I could never see that, you know? And so, a couple years ago, it was my birthday weekend, and I had partied with my friends all night, and I had asked them to come pick me up. And, you know, I wanted to keep partying that weekend. And so it was a Sunday night. And I remember we had went to church that morning, and I remember in church, the pastor saying how God has already taken the next step. He's just waiting for us to step out and take it with him, that he already knows what's next, but we have to be ready to take it. And I remember feeling very convicted that morning, and I had no idea why. I had no idea what was coming next. And so we get home from church, and I'm like, I'm going to go out with one of my friends to the bar, and we're going to have some drinks for my birthday. And me and my husband got this huge argument, and I ended up going anyways. So he dropped me off at the bar. We're drinking, you know, drunk, and out of nowhere, I told her, I said, "You know what? I think I'm going to stop drinking. I think I'm going to go to AA tomorrow." And she was like, "What?" She's like, "You're going to do what?" And I was like, "I'm going to go to AA tomorrow." And she was like, "Okay, whatever, you know?" And so I called my husband and told him, I said, "I think I'm going to go to a meeting tomorrow." And he's like, "What? Okay, whatever, you know?" And, so that's what I did, you know, and I had my last drink on July 14th, 2019. And I know whatever happened that day had nothing to do with any of the choices that I had chosen to make up until that point, because if it was up to me, I would have ruined everything. I was living my life on my will, and I would only reach out to God when I really needed something, when I was in a really bad spot and I needed him to just give me this one last chance. So I know that day that my sobriety was not due to anything that I had done. And I know now that my higher power, who I choose to call God, had a plan for me and still has a plan, and that he reached deep down into my heart and soul and pulled me out of that hole that I was in, that deep, dark hole, and told me it was time. It was time for me to live the life that he wanted me to live, and that I didn't have to keep carrying this stuff on my back all the time, because that stuff gets really heavy. And I remember right before I'd quit drinking, I remember I'd be driving home from work, you know, and like I said before, I have a really good job. I have a good education. I have a good home life. I have my kids, my husband. I have this good life. And I remember driving home and thinking, if I just drive my car off that bridge, if I just swerve a little bit to the right, like I could end it all and I don't have to feel all this shit anymore. And I'm grateful that I never chose to make that choice. And that was, I felt that way every single day. And, you know, when I went to my first meeting on July 15th, 2019, I was very broken that day and I was hungover. I was emotionally wrecked. I was starting to remember all these little things that I had done throughout my alcoholism that were so incredibly painful to the people around me, including my husband and my children. And, you know, during my alcoholism, I had always wanted to cover up what was going on. So I was doing all these things on the outside. Like, you know, I was going to school. I had this good job. I was, you know, living like I thought would be a really good wife, you know? And I wanted people to think I was doing really good because in the inside, I was doing really bad and I was feeling absolutely horrible. And I thought all those things could mask what was really going on behind closed doors, and it didn't. And in fact, it made it a little bit worse. Because I have this image to uphold now, and I'm struggling to uphold this image, and I'm over here deep in my alcoholism, and I was drinking, you know, every single day, and it got to the point where I'd have to start hiding what I was drinking from my husband. Little did I know he wasn't paying as much attention as he thought, but I was, you know, in that state of paranoia, thinking that he was, and my kids did notice, you know, and my son still tells me sometimes, why did you used to go here all the time? You know, one of my favorite spots for drinking. And I tell him, you know, it's because I have a problem with alcohol and I was drinking every day. He's like, is that why you're always gone with your friends? Is that why you're always doing this? You're always doing that. And I hope one day, you know, he's able to see that I made that change and I don't do those things anymore. You know, I hope one day he's able to differentiate the two. But so I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, extremely and emotionally broken, a whole mess that day. And I remember not really hearing much in that meeting, but I remember feeling the presence of my higher power, you know, who I choose to call God. I felt that there. And I didn't feel alone. For once in my whole life, I felt like I was where I belonged, you know, and little by little, that pain started to go away. And, you know, I was going to a meeting twice a day. I'd go once on my lunch and then I'd go right after work straight to a meeting. And that was what I did for at least the first 2 months. And I hadn't really found a sponsor yet. I was just kind of filling everybody out and I was sharing and I was getting involved and I was doing whatever it is that was required of me to stay sober. And I started to feel really good again. And I started to get my feelings back. And I had heard other people say that before, especially with my husband being in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'd go to meetings with him and they'd say, oh, I got my feelings back and it was shitty. And I remember that feeling. You know, I remember getting all these feelings back and I remember not knowing what to do with them all. I felt very scattered for a little while there until I realized, you know, reading the book, doing the meetings, praying, and finding that sponsor was what I needed to kind of organize everything, if that makes sense, kind of put it all into one box. And then I was able to sort everything out. And for me, for the first few months when I started getting my feelings back, and I would just randomly cry, just like out of nowhere. And it wouldn't just be sad tears, it would be happy tears. You know, I was so happy that I got another chance at this, at life. And so that's what happened, you know. And then now today, what it's like, you know, everybody always says, oh, life is so great, but life is so great. It's great. You know, and that's not to say that every day is great, because sometimes my days freaking suck. And some days my days are really hard. And sometimes I want to give up, but I can tell you this, that there has only been one time when I had ever thought about drinking throughout my sobriety thus far. And it wasn't enough to take me out. It was just that obsession of the mind. And as long as I can reach out to God and I can reach out to another member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I know that I'm going to make it through those days, because truth be told, there will be those days. And that was something, you know, for me that I hadn't experienced yet. And so that one was a tough one, you know, but I didn't act on it. You know, I didn't act on that impulse. And that is a huge thing for an alcoholic. You know, we act quickly on our impulses without thinking. And I didn't do that. And I reached out to my sponsor, you know, and we worked it out. And I think it's also important to mention, especially for the newcomer or maybe somebody who's new in Alcoholics Anonymous that is struggling with finding a sponsor. My first sponsor, it didn't work out. I wanted it to work out, but it just didn't work out. And, you know, that's okay. You know, it's okay to find a sponsor and then think, well, you know what, maybe I need to find a new one. And all you have to do is just be honest with that person and tell them and go find a new one. And I remember being at a campfire meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember sitting there thinking, I really need to get a new sponsor. Like, I was right on the edge of either, you know, drinking or being miserable in sobriety. And I didn't realize that at the time. You know, I realize it now, but at that time I just felt very misplaced again. And I had met somebody through my aunt who's also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had reached out to her and asked her to be my sponsor. And I'm so, so grateful that I did that, because having that direction from her and the relationship with her has truly changed my life. And it's given me the perspective, you know, that I can depend on another woman. And she's wonderful, you know, and she's taken me through the steps. We're almost through. We're actually on step 9 right now. And I would have hoped to be through my steps by now, but that wasn't what God had planned for me. And I'm grateful that I did do it the way that I've done it so far, because it's been very thorough and very deep. And it's gotten into the nooks and crannies that I didn't even know were there. And you know, when we did step 4, I had to do a lot of writing, and I had to do, a lot of backtracking, and I had to think of all these things in my life that had hurt me. And that was a very emotional and angering process. I didn't want to, you know, keep going through that, but I did it anyways. And, you know, when I shared that with her, as well as my fear inventory and my sex inventory, which was also really hard, you know, I talked about it and I didn't have to carry it around anymore. People always say that, you know, step 4 is a great experience. You know, you'll feel like a weight has been lifted off your shoulders. And I would say that is true. I know that is true. And when I got rid of all that crap, I was finally able to see things with clear eyes. And, you know, that was not an easy thing to do. And then what's even worse is when your sponsor, you know, tells you all of your character defects, which I didn't like that either. And I remember when she read them to me or sent me the list, I go, shit, those are really bad. Like, that's really bad. And she was like, well, you know, it is what it is. I didn't want to hear that I was self-centered or unkind or that I played the victim. I didn't want to know that I was an enabler or that I was dishonest, you know, and I didn't want to know that I was always seeking acceptance from people, you know, but I needed to hear that. And I feel like if we aren't aware of what our character defects are, there's nothing that we can do to try and fix them. We got to know. And the only way you're going to get that is by somebody else telling you, you know, somebody else being 100% honest with you. And it's funny because she had asked me the next day, she's like, are you mad at me? And I was like, no, I'm grateful that I have somebody in my life to be honest with me today. And not only who's honest with me, but still loves and accepts me no matter what, no matter which defect comes out, she still loves me. And I can say that with all of my family and Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because it really is a family. And through Alcoholics Anonymous, I've really been able to grow. And I've been able to find out who I really am. And I think as alcoholics or addicts, that's something we're always searching for, who we really are. You know, we want to fit in. We want to find our place. And I can say for myself, my place is in Alcoholics Anonymous. And through Alcoholics Anonymous, I've had the privilege to be a better mother, to be a really good employee, to be a great wife. Those things right there, that's enough for me. I was sold, you know, and I started to see the changes, and everybody else started to notice it too. And I get to do a lot of things today that I didn't get to do in my active addiction. You know, today I get to be present for my children, and that's through the good days and the bad days. I get to be present for my husband through the good days and the bad. You know, I get to go to work You know, I get to put gas in my car. I get to pay my rent. I get to pay my bills. I get to make an honest living. I get to live another day sober. Like, that in itself is enough. I don't have to do anything anymore. Nothing is a have to for me. It's all get to's. I get to. God has granted me another chance, you know? And I just, I'm so grateful for this program. I hope, you know, if you're listening to this and you're a newcomer or you're somebody who's really just struggling right now in Alcoholics Anonymous, I really hope that you choose to reach out and that you don't give up on yourself, you know? And the truth is, nobody's going to do this for you. It has to be done by you. You have to be willing. You know, that's all you have to do is be willing. It doesn't say you have to be perfect or that you even have to do it correctly. You just have to be willing to do it. And I think that's one of the most important aspects that people don't understand, you know, when they're new in the program or maybe when they've even got some time, you know, is that you just have to be willing. You just have to be willing to give something different a try. And I can promise you, life changing. And all the gifts of the program, you know, today, I have two really good jobs. You know, I'm a social worker. I'm a social worker now. Like, I get to help children. I get to help children who went through the same things that I did. And I work with domestic violence victims, you know, and that's also a huge deal because my mom was a victim of domestic violence her whole life and still is, you know, and both of my parents are still active in their addictions and their disease. And I'm able to accept them today, but I'm also able to set healthy boundaries and standards. And that's okay to have those boundaries. I don't have expectations, but I have boundaries and I have standards and things I will and will not accept. And a few months after I had got sober, my little brother, who's also very, very active in his addiction, got sober as well. And I remember being on the phone with him telling him, you need to go to rehab. You need to go to rehab. And he was like, how can you say anything? All you do is get drunk all the time. And I was like, well, as a matter of fact, I got 14 days sober. So why don't you go ahead and take yourself to rehab, you know? And he went to rehab and I was able to help him get into that rehab center. You know, my husband and I got him in there. We went and seen him, you know, all the times that we were able to. And, you know, he's also a sober member of the program today. And I have a relationship with him that I've never had before. And it's a healthy relationship. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the chance to have those healthy relationships again and to really have the power to reach out to God and change my life. And, you know, that's done through meetings, getting on my knees every single freaking day, even when I don't want to. I still get on my knees and I ask for that direction from God. And I say my third step and seventh step prayer. And, you know, the direction of a sponsor, that in itself is huge. And so I recommend if you're new in the program, get somebody to sponsor you. Get somebody who's going to be there for you and is not going to co-sign your bullshit. Get somebody who understands you. And I can guarantee you, you'll find them if you just look, you know? So, like I said, I'm really grateful to be a part of this program. It has changed my life. And I am so grateful that I don't ever, ever have to pick up a drink again, you know? So I hope that, like I said, if you're struggling, reach out and give it a chance. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Tani. What a fabulous testimony to the program. And you're coming up on 2 years. So you're like, you're so new. I mean, for the amount of healing and understanding about what you experienced, I have to give some credit to your sponsor for working those steps with you because you have a very thorough understanding. As you were explaining it, I was very, very impressed with all the work you've done around that. I want your sponsor.
Thank you.
So you and your brother are sober now. That just must be amazing since you protected him or tried to took the responsibility of protecting him for so long. Talk to me about that relationship with your brother in sobriety and how that's changed and your husband as well.
Okay. So the relationship with my brother, I wish I could describe it, but the best way that I can describe it is bright and loving and real. You know, both of us had experienced addiction issues and then issues with alcohol for, you know, many, many years. And the relationship that we have today is so different than anything we had before, because we're both living on this different plane in life. You know, it's not about being selfish anymore and about, you know, only thinking of our own needs. It's about loving each other and appreciating each other and appreciating the ones around you. And, you know, my brother, this last Christmas, he actually came out to my house and he had brought my kid gifts. And I was like, you know, you didn't have to do all this. He's like, yeah, he goes, I know. He goes, but I've never been to a single birthday. You know, I've never got them a single Christmas present. I've never done any of that. He's like, so this is what I wanted to do for them. And, that it wasn't the gift, it was the action behind it, you know? And I think that's something that we're both able to really relate in now, is how important action is. And especially with the way that we grew up, action is extremely important in the way that we live our lives today. And the relationship that we have is absolutely amazing. Like, we're able to sit and laugh and converse together without having any substance involved. Like, that's a huge deal for us. And not just that, but we have broken the generational, the generational like toxicity that has followed our family, you know, for many, many years, but we have taken that step to break it. And I think that that in itself is huge. And so now we're creating this new life, you know, with our kids, or well, he doesn't have kids, but with my kids and, you know, whatever family he chooses to have one day, we've broken that generational cycle. And so that is something that we'll always look back on and know that we did that right around the same time together, you know, because our sobriety dates are very close. They're actually just 6 months apart. So that relationship is amazing today. And I thank God for that all the time, you know. And I thank God, because when I was brand new to AA, every time, you know, they had that moment of silence for the alcoholic or addict who's still suffering in and out of these rooms, I thought of him every single time. And then he got sober. So that's another way that I know God works. I know it works, and I know the program works. And so that relationship is really good today. Now, as far as the relationship with my husband, it's never been better. It's never, ever been better. And I'm able to fully give myself to him. I'm not holding anything back like I had been in the past. And I'm able to respect him today and love him in a way that isn't damaging, you know, because we can love anybody in our addiction, but usually what comes with our love is not anything positive. And it's funny, because on my 18 months, he had told me, he was like, wow, he's like, you've really changed. Like, you used to be so freaking selfish. And I was like, wow, like, I didn't want to hear that, you know, but I know that the dynamic has changed. And, you know, he doesn't come from a positive background either. So the life that we're giving our kids today and the environment we're raising them in is something that I know they're going to be able to take with them as they get older. And it's not going to be something damaging, you know. They're going to be able to be productive members of society, I would hope, you know. And the best thing is our kids don't ever have to watch us pick up or take another drink ever again. And you know, we get to be there for them, and we get to be there for each other. And every aspect of our marriage and relationship has changed. Any way that you can think of it has changed, physically, emotionally, sexually, you know, all those aspects have changed. But that's because we've both done the work that we need to do in ourselves first, because I couldn't give what he needed before, you know. And he was very patient throughout my alcoholism. He was extremely patient. Because I know I couldn't be that patient, you know, not today anyways. And, you know, I'm grateful that I get to celebrate his 10 years of sobriety this month with him. And I've been around for, you know, 7 of those years. So I'm really grateful for that. But I would say that Alcoholics Anonymous has transformed our marriage for sure.
I'm so proud of Alcoholics Anonymous, hearing your story, and what a painful childhood. And then you see this pain turn into such freedom and peace and serenity and joy. And I'm moved by you and your brother and your husband's story, and how the universe or God or the higher power, whoever wants to call it, whatever, the energy that is, works in these powerful ways. And I don't know you, but I'm so proud of you.
Thank you so much. It's been a long road, but you know what? It's been totally worth it. It was worth every ounce of pain and disparity that I have ever felt in my life to get to where I'm at today. I can't say I'd want to do it all over again, but I will say that it's definitely worth it. And it's brought me to this place, you know, where I have a peace that surpasses all understanding. And I have a clear mind today that I didn't have ever in my whole life, you know, even before active alcoholism, I didn't have that. And I'm just so grateful to be a part of this program.
For more information, read the first 164 pages of The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous or visit keepcomingback.net.